Hey everybody, Aaron here with a miniature spoiler podcast. When I first saw the House of the Dragon premiere, the thing that jumped out to me was what appeared to be an entirely new piece of information that the so-called A Song of Ice and Fire, the prophetic vision dreams that we'd previously thought started with Rhaegar Targaryen, actually goes all the way back to Aegon and was the prime motivator, impetus for his invasion of Westeros. Here to talk with me tonight about these revelations is the entertainment correspondent for Insider, and she's the co-host of Cast of Kings alongside David Chin. All right, Kim, I brought you on here for one thing and one thing only.
What's that?
I took it as a pretty big change in my understanding of the lore when we heard Viserys say that Aegon is the one actually that had heard this prophecy of the world ending and the threat of the White Walkers. And this has been a secret pass from Targaryen king to Targaryen king. Now, I actually, the day after we saw the premiere, I posted on Twitter, it's like, one thing I think I can say without getting in trouble is that there is a moment in the episode, the pilot episode, that I would have considered high Martin heresy had it not been for George's intimate involvement of the show. And within 4 hours, some other person leaked, you know, and people were able to put together context that this is referring to this prophecy. And I got most people's minds were kind of blown by that. I got a little bit of pushback of like, well, actually, in a So Spake Martin archive, he made an offhand comment about, you know, Aegon might maybe have been motivated by of the conquest. But I'm like, man, I don't know. Like, I feel like the vast majority of even Game of Thrones super nerds, if you told them this, they'd be like, wow, that seems like a big change. So I took it that way, that this is not a big change, but it's definitely a change from this is something that Rhaegar came up with. This is some prophecy that he interpreted to, especially the Targaryen king to Targaryen king aspect of it.
Yeah, heir to heir. Yeah, I mean, I think that there are two levels in which that scene in this pilot episode like kind of took me aback, because yes, it's like it's a different level of confirmation. I think I know what you're talking about with that So Spake Martin thing. It's like a video interview where he alludes to like Aegon may have, like, some people say that Aegon may have like wanted to unify the kingdoms because of some, like, because he knew what would happen in 300 years, but like that's pretty vague. Like,
and to take that and be like, everybody knows this, duh. Like, I'm like, okay. But because this was also like a late 2018, like this is also fairly, even if you want to say everybody knew this, this is stuff that people conceivably could have missed if, you know, they weren't paying attention to the So Spake Martin archive going into season 8 of Game of Thrones. So I think it's still something interesting to discuss and see what we come up with from a what does it all mean kind of perspective.
Yeah. Totally. Also, like, he could have put that in Fire and Blood if he wanted to, but like he's been withholding that explanation in the book so far, and it's very interesting to me that he is like totally happy to like drop those sorts of nuggets into this House of the Dragon series.
Because,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you saying?
I was just going to then launch into like, I have interviewed the showrunners.
Oh, well, before we get to that, I want to say one other perspective I saw that I thought was interesting is, you know, some of the more book first parts of the internet that I was perusing for reactions to this grenade I threw into the community were along the line of like really angry that this was stuff was coming out in a television show instead of a piece of literature written by Martin. What do you make? Because I got my own reaction to that. But what do you make of that? I guess book chauvinism. I will.
No, that is a good question. I mean, I think that I have gotten so far removed from like putting all my eggs in the book baskets at this point. Like, I'm still a little sweet summer child who thinks George is going to finish Winds of Winter sometime before I die. But
I think you've gotten wobbly on A Dream of Spring.
I've gotten wobbly on A Dream of Spring. I think that this latest this latest spat of like prequel, sequel, successor show news and how like George at first was like, I'm not writing any scripts. I'm not really focused on it. And you know, he still hasn't written scripts, but he does seem very involved. And so it's like,
yes,
if this is now George's preferred method of dropping little like Easter eggs, then so be it. It's his story. He gets to decide. He could have withheld that detail from the House of the Dragon showrunners.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He told it to them for some reason. And like, okay, cool. Let's run with it. Let's have some fun, like theory mongering moments again. I don't know. I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm the way I look at it is George cut his teeth writing scripts for television. Like that was where he kind of got his genesis. And I don't think he sees a distinction. I think he thinks this is my imaginary world and I'm putting things of it out through encyclopedias. I'm putting things out through fake history books. I'm putting things out there in terms of shows. And it's all like a multimedia experience. Like, I don't think that he recognizes that one is canon and one is not. Although, you know, I don't know if you actually asked him, is like, are these shows canon or higher canon than the books? Or is it like, but I just feel like he just doesn't, I don't think that he sees that distinction as like, oh, well this, yeah, the real stuff is the books and the show is, you know, rumor and innuendo and all that kind of stuff, because, you know, it's just not how he relates to the medium. And it's the same way that's like when I, you know, like if you're a Star Wars fan growing up, it's like, you know, you had the movies, but you also had the books, you had the comic books, and you have the video games, and they were kind of all fair game to like out nerd each other on, right? So it seems very weird to me to get like extremely precious over one type or the other, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think that I've long just held the position that it is George's world and inventions, and we're at his whim for how he decides like the best way to continue engaging us on this in the continued absence of an actual completed A Song of Ice and Fire story.
Right. So you have the advantage over me in that before we went to the premiere, you had gotten a chance to sit down and talk in a round table fashion with some of the showrunners. So you might be a little bit ahead of the game as far as figuring some of this stuff out. Do you want to dish on any of that?
Yes, I would love to, because I think that that's like, I think that that's probably the bigger question that a lot of folks are going to have is like, wait, is this a George reveal or is this just a show reveal? You know, that same debate that we had over some of the later seasons of Game of Thrones and stuff.
Ryan Condal coloring outside of the lines. Is that what we got here?
No, Ryan Condal. I spoke with him and Miguel Sapochnik in this like virtual roundtable. That whole prophecy scene came up, and Ryan immediately, the first thing he said was, that was a detail that George actually gave us early in the story break. So like before they had even shaped the way that the whole season would look, it sounds like Ryan and George, who we know have had multiple meetings, the way that Ryan got involved with this entire series was that he was just a huge fan and he was working in the TV industry. And I believe that the story goes that he just like sent George a message and said, like, I'd love to buy you dinner, because he knew that they were like in the same city or something. Mm-hmm. So honestly, kind of similar to the David and Dan, the D&D origin story of, I guess you just got to be a bro who asks for dinner with George R. Martin.
Right place, right time with the right entree, and you too can showrun a Game of Thrones spinoff sequel.
Yeah, so they certainly seem to have bonded over the fact that Ryan Condal knows the A Song of Ice and Fire world inside and out, and George clearly trusts and like respects his approach to this story. So Ryan told me, he said, this is how Ryan described the detail that George gave him. He said, quote, the idea that Aegon the Conqueror was himself a dreamer, and that's what motivated the conquest, which he, meaning George, mentioned casually in conversation, as he often does with huge pieces of information like that. End quote. Which I kind of love, because that is kind of consistent of what we've heard George say otherwise, that like, it's not like George said, okay, I have this big thing and you guys are going to be the first ones to reveal it and the fandom's going to lose their mind. It was like, no, George was just talking about the Targaryens while they were discussing like the early story break for this show, and I guess just mentioned that offhandedly.
Yeah, because they're just real people to him, and he's just, you know, like, yeah, this is just this is how it went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also think it's notable that like Ryan Condal calls it a huge piece of information. Like, that should signal to us that, again, even if some people might have inferred or guessed this based on like things that George had said over the years, like, it's supposed to come off as a big piece of information to us in this pilot.
And that's the other thing, and of course everyone's listening to this by now has seen it, but that's the way it's treated. That's the thing I couldn't come back and like slap these guys and gals with, is the way it's treated on the episode is as if it is like, holy shit, you know, get your big princess pants on, you're about to hear something. Mm-hmm. You know, and the show, even kind of like the way it's framed, is kind of like, from the viewer's perspective, we feel like we're being brought in to something new and something that the show thinks is going to be a banger of a reveal.
Yeah, totally. I know in my notes that I took from watching the episode, the fact that like they're cutting between Viserys telling Rhaenyra this and all of the lords swearing fealty, and I do not think it's a coincidence that like he says Aegon foresaw the end of the world of men, and then we cut to a Stark swearing fealty to a Targaryen.
Right.
And then like jump back and he says, like, the real bombshell was when he was like, Aegon called his dream the Song of Ice and Fire, and I was like, like, we're getting, the lore is coming back into play, and he's like holding, I think the cat's paw blade is like literally his waist.
Right, stuck there in his belt. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Which that was something, I also interviewed Patty Considine, and he was like, oh yeah, Viserys like is very connected to this blade, like it's very important to him, he always has to have it with him, and like he just knows that that's, to him, that's like a little like nerdy link to the fact that like, oh, this weapon that will eventually kill the Night King is just, is a part of his little piece of the
blade
the lore.
Of destiny.
So I mean, we know that it came from George. We know that it is supposed to be treated like a big piece of information. And so I think that that just raises some questions, and I also I think it is important to talk about like the canon versus not canon aspect of this too, because that was something that I also asked Ryan Condal about. Let's see, I'm making sure that I'm quoting from the right spot here, but we were talking about the fact that Fire and Blood is like this subjective history retelling, right? Like, it's not written in the novels, it's not written in the same style as the A Song of Ice and Fire novels, and so Ryan Condal was talking to me about that, and he said that he thinks that what will make the audience engage is not like what happens, because you can find out what happens by just going to Wikipedia, but he says that the how and the why of things happen is kind of what the show is going to be able to offer. And then I followed up and I asked, I was like, okay, so this is what we're watching in House of the Dragon is the objective truth. And Condal said, correct. And then I kept talking. It was like one of those like interjection moments. I was like, this is like the canon version of how everything unfolded. And then he was like, well, I hesitate to say canon because George wrote the canon version. But yes, this is the idea, is that House of the Dragon.
He's being respectful, but he's definitely saying, yeah.
Yeah, like, they aren't, like you said, coloring outside of the lines for no reason. Like, everything that they're doing is supposed to be true to George's canon understanding of the Targaryen history.
And I agree. Like, I think that's why it's like, if I gave someone a bullet point of everything that happens in the pilot, I don't think you would be spoiled, because, like, in Fire and Blood, you can read that Viserys's, you know, wife died in childbirth, and his male heir lasted another day, and then he wasted away and all that. But when you see that happen on the screen against the backdrop of this dramatic tourney, and then the dragons breathing fire on their pyre, like, it's a lot more real, and it's a lot more, you know a lot more about the king Viserys than you did just reading it off the page, because it's like, well, you know, from the page it's like he loses his wife, and you know, but like seeing the actual impact, and both good and bad, the fact that he was willing to sacrifice his wife against her will to get mm-hmm. that male heir, and then it blowing up and but then blowing up in his face. Like I definitely see his point that like the actual plot points are not nearly as important as people's reaction to them and the emotion it generates and the intrigue it generates.
Yeah. And I think that was what was really successful about this episode is everything is being driven by very clearly laid out like emotions and motivations and messy relationships. And like, I think that they did that very well in that like you immediately kind of understand why all of these characters are doing what they're doing, even if what they're doing is awful, which mm-hmm. is, you know, you got to sell us on that. Like, why is this so important? And so, again, that all kind of comes back to like the fact that this prophecy has been like hanging over Viserys's head in theory for his entire reign. And now his anxiety about the fact that like he needs to tell it to someone, otherwise this prophecy will be lost to time, as we know it is at some point in the future.
Right. And I guess that's the other thing is like I saw a couple of critiques about the, you know, people guessing and putting all this stuff together. And there is some interestingly inconsistent behavior. Like Aegon conquers all of Westeros ostensibly to start a sequence of events that's going to lead in the downfall of the White Walkers and the Night's King and all that. And yet, canonically, he never even visits the Wall. The mm-hmm. Wall remains in a constant state of disrepair and understaffing throughout the reign of all the Targaryen kings. Mm-hmm. So, like, if this is the all-important thing, why did they let it get that? And maybe the answer is, like, they knew the Wall was going to be not enough and that and they needed the dragons and they needed to keep the dragons strong. But they fucked that mission up, too, to be honest. So I do wonder if there's going to be some, like, other... I won't say retconning, but like more explanation for like, actually, it turns out that Aegon secretly was doing this and secretly doing that and was thwarted by that, because there I do think there is a little bit of truth to those. Like, well, if this is true, where is it in the text? You know, where is this urgency in the text?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And like the other question that I had is like, how was Martin planning on deploying this information in the books? Because like, or was he not? He's already
had multiple cracks at the, like, you know, we've had the Rogue Prince, we've got Fire and Blood, we got Song of Ice and Fire. Mm-hmm. You know, the only, and I can't stress enough, the only place you can see this is a So Spake Martin archive from late 2018. And then mm-hmm. he's been kind of silent since. So that's a good question.
Yeah, because like, I thought of that when you were talking about like the fact that Aegon never went to the Wall. It's interesting to me that the one thing that Martin seems to have gone out of his way in both A World of Ice and Fire and Fire and Blood is to let us know that Aegon and Visenya visited the Citadel in Old Town prior to the conquest.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, that was always a little bit of a bee in my bonnet with the show taking all the time to have like Sam go to Old Town and steal all these books, and then we never heard about them anymore. And I'm like, okay, is it gonna be some like secret manuscript thing or some like old, you know, tattered notes? Which again, that just made like Lord of the Rings pop in my head of like, you know, like Gandalf in the archives discovering yeah. like the final account of Isildur, and like mm-hmm. is that what is there gonna be some big thing about like the Targaryen origins or something at some point in the future, actually, with like Jon and Dany. I don't know.
Actually, Sam just kind of forgot about that he had those books.
Sam kind of forgot. Gilly kind of forgot that she learned how to read.
Yeah. Yeah. So since we talked about the, you know, impacts, I also, while we're being, I guess, kind of like nitpicky, is it smart from a storytelling perspective of this new show to essentially make it that vital to the Game of Thrones series? Because like, to me, that's the thing I worry about is like, I'm ready to make my peace. And like, I don't like season 7. I don't like season 7 in retrospect. I certainly don't like how season 8 played out. Mm-hmm. But like, whatever, that's done. I'm now interested in these Targaryens and their Games of Thrones and their Civil War and all that stuff. But now this show has been tied to the legacy of the old show in a very, you know, like the Targaryen scheme at the end was to have a, what, 16-year-old girl pop up with her magic knife and stabby stab and then hand the thing all over to Bran the Broken. To whatever extent you think the old show failed or succeeded, I don't know about tying this current show to that legacy.
Right. Given how unclearly this prophecy played out in the in HBO's Game of Thrones canon, because then that's also messy. We know that those final seasons of Game of Thrones are not supposed to be canon for George's universe. He keeps reminding us that, like, some things are different. There's been a butterfly effect, blah, 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 blah. Like, far fewer events that we saw in season 7 or 8 came straight from George, which maybe isn't what we thought was happening at the time. So now, yeah, it is weird. I don't know how to square that because I still have so many questions about how we were supposed to interpret the final episodes of Game of Thrones in connection to Azor Ahai, the prince that was promised, the Long Night, right. Like all of these things that they went out of their way to mention several times throughout the series.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
And then they didn't give any of them like a very tidy conclusion, which is fine. I don't need like everything tied up in a bow, but something would be some clarity on like how Benioff and Weiss believe they were showing like the completion of those arguments would be good. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like we didn't get that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but
no, I think that they, they had their eyes set on Star Wars and were trying to just, And so it came in. It's the way, it's ironic how that worked out. I will say that since I kind of like, you know, said the potential drawback, the flip side is it's entirely possible given enough seasons and if people, they really nail this and it's super gripping and it's interesting. I wonder if they can lay enough kind of prophetic things in this show that when you watch season 7 and 8, things make a little bit more sense, like with the background information. Now it's, I don't believe that. I don't think that's possible. But on the other hand, I've seen some pretty incredible, like in, you know, talking about Star Wars, Star Trek, other, I've seen some pretty incredible retcons that have been able to like take things that the fans weren't so sure about and use it as a foundation to build something great and enhance the appreciation of that. So like I said, I don't know what that would look like, but if they played their cards right, maybe we have a different perspective going into Game of Thrones that makes that, you know, double D ending that we got, that's non-canonical. Maybe it's a way to square those.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they're having the cat's paw dagger feature so heavily in there, because they, maybe they will figure out a way to make some connection between Arya and this prophecy, which would help my brain a lot with like squaring why she wound up being the one, aside from like the only reason that we got from Benioff and Weiss about why it was Arya is that like, well, everyone thought it was going to be Jon Snow and we didn't want to do that, so we picked Arya because she's like the most skilled fighter.
The Blood Raven in this era is not to come yet, right? So one thing they could do is whoever is the current three-eyed raven, because that's not a hereditary position, but that's essentially a position that's been held since antiquity in, you know, in the North, right? Is it possible that, you know, one of the one of the queens goes up there to talk to the current three-eyed raven to get an ID? Because like the other thing about satisfying is like, I think a lot of my problems, I mean, it's a completely radical reimagining of where I thought they were going, but a lot of my problems with the finale would be resolved if this was Bran nakedly manipulating the situation. And not even Brandon himself, but like this is a long con play that the three-eyed raven has made over all these eons. And this is the culmination, actually taking direct control over the affairs of man to, you know, do whatever. Like, that if they could find some way to reveal that, that would be something that would make me think, okay, I would definitely watch maybe season 8 again with fresh eyes and see if this all tracks together.
Yeah. Would that explain why there's a weirwood with a face?
Well, that's the other thing. I don't know if we have time to talk about, but yeah, like that's the other thing I always came out of buzzing is that what the hell is there a full ass weirwood doing in King's Landing? Because I think they showed it. I think they showed it on the show, her praying before that stump in like season 2 when she was,
yeah, like by the ocean with like that ocean view.
And now and we were talking about this pre-cast and like, well, didn't they cut that down between? But these things were cut down during the Andal invasion, which happened thousands of years ago. Like all trees, all weirwood trees and godswoods south of the neck have been cut down and are stumps. But I checked myself and I read in, there's an entry in the history of the world of ice and a Song of Ice and Fire that mentions that there is a godswood in King's Landing that has a heartwood that's not a weirwood because those were all cut down, but it's a white oak. And I forgot, I should have wrote down the name, but it had something like fire ivy that was growing up through the trunk and through these dead branches of this old oak that made it look like a weirwood. But that thing says that it doesn't have a face carved onto it.
And the one in the House of the Dragon pilot definitely does.
Definitely had a face. And I guess I don't, that's not going to make or break it, because if they're just like, well, we just want to make sure people know that this is a Godswood, and it's very evocative of what, you know, even down to the reflecting pool that, you know, the Ned had up in Winterfell.
Yeah.
I don't really care. But on the other hand, you know, what, 170, 180, however many years later, we're going to see Sansa in this thing, and it's all been chopped down. So
yeah.
I wonder if we'll actually see the destruction of the Weirwood and some of these civil unrests or the Heartwood tree.
Maybe. Yeah. And then see, that's when like I get in the weeds of like, okay, was that just a production design thing where like nobody thought about the ripple effects of the meaning of having, cause like it is just a neat parallel to like the Game of Thrones pilot when Catelyn and Ned are in the Godswood together. Like they're clearly laying the same like intimate loving relationship between Ned and Catelyn and Alicent and Rhaenyra. Like I think you only see people relaxing and having fun in a Weirwood tree setting when they are affectionate with each other.
What else did we, I mean, I'm sure there's like other stuff, but I've only saw this I'm recording this in advance, and I've only seen the episode the one time, so that was the big thing I stumbled out of the theater thinking, oh my god.
Are we allowed to talk about the like in the coming weeks segment that we saw?
Backstop us appropriately here.
Okay.
This is the last thing me and Kim are going to talk about. If you don't want to, if you did avoid the weeks ahead, because I know some people are real spoiler purists and they don't want to have any hints. Don't know why you'd be listening to a lore heavy podcast if that's the case, but just for the weirdos out there, now's the time to turn off the podcast if you don't want any kind of spoilers at all, because Kim's gonna drop some science on us based on that. Okay, that's clearly everyone's had a chance to turn off the podcast. what you got, Kim?
I thought it was notable that like the name dropping of A Song of Ice and Fire and this whole idea of like dragon dreams was specific enough and like tied to what we know about the Game of Thrones series. But then in the weeks ahead thing, they also dropped the phrase "the prince that was promised," and that was really when I was like, okay, they are not just like slipping this in there for a one episode Easter egg. Like this is apparently going to be a like continued conversation about this prophecy and the fact that they're like overlapping the prince that was promised with the Azor Ahai language. Everything was like another little like mind-blowing moment to me.
And that's where I keep coming back to, like, are these mad men really trying to, because I could see Sapochnik kind of being invested in that. Like, I'm a big part of 7 and 8 and 6. And like, I'm a kind of a fan favorite. Boy, it'd be nice if we could salvage something from that and get people reinterested in revisiting that and to weave that. Because you're right, it's not like this is just like a one-off thing that kind of like gets people talking. It does seem that it's part of the fabric of the show, woven all the way through it, that this is one of the mission, or one of the theses of the show.
Right. And like back to what I was saying about how Ryan Condal was saying that the how and the why are more important, it seems like they're really emphasizing that the why of all the shit that's about to go down with this Targaryen civil war will be partially, if not enormously, informed by Rhaenyra knowing about this prophecy. And like, who else is she going to tell? Is she going to tell one of her sons? Or
will
again,
she tell her best BFF that will later become a rival?
I don't know. I have so many questions.
That would be breaking her dad's rules, but you know, this is king to king. But no, I think that's a good question. Yeah, what does she do with this information?
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I think that it's definitely kind of, I think it's fun to have such a like little fandom shaking moment thrown in there, just a little grenade of lore that we all get to ask questions about. And then like it did absolutely do the job of making me more intrigued to see where they're going with this, as opposed to being like, oh, I know how everything's gonna unfold because I've read this book, but I'm just like along for the ride, which is fun. It does feel like they're etching out some new territory for themselves, apparently entirely with George's blessing and encouragement. So,
yeah, and that's the key thing to me. Like, if George is saying he was head down and he just kind of signed off on adapt fire and blood, and this came out of nowhere,
yeah,
I would have. But like, the fact that there is some evidence that George was building towards this direction even 4 years ago, and the fact that he has been enthusiastically behind, you know, Ryan Connell's his handpicked guy, sat down, clearly have a lot of conversations, and yeah, he's not writing scripts, but from what I heard from Sapochnik and Connell at the event, like, he's very, very involved with this project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he read all the scripts, which wasn't the case for Game of Thrones season 8. I don't know if you remember that little tidbit. Kerfuffle. He didn't know what was going to happen in the final season, whereas he's read all the scripts for House of the Dragon. He's seen early cuts of, I believe, most of the episodes, mm-hmm. And he just can't stop like raving about it on his not a blog. Yeah. So he's happy with what they've done.
I think this fits George's personality, because this is a story that's told. It's done. It's got a very strong like beginning and end. It's public information. And this is where his gardener shit really shines. Like, I've got the scaffold and it's all complete. I know where it's going, but I can throw in this detail and that detail and this emotional beat and this, and to make it like better. But like, it's hard to garden into something that you don't even know where it's going. And I think that is the reason it's been a very long time since we've heard anything about the Winds of Winter, and why I remain skeptical that we'll either of those projects will see the light of day. But
that was another fun tidbit from one of my interviews. I spoke with Fabian, who plays Sir Criston Cole. And I was talking about, you know, like the difference between Fire and Blood in A Song of Ice and Fire and how it's more subjective. And he was like, yeah, what's nice is, the way he phrased it, he was like, the lyrics are written, but the melody is ours. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. Like, we already know the story, but how it's going to be told to us and how it's going to be processed and how beautiful or sad or tragic it is, we get to see unfold a little bit differently with all of like the emotional thrust behind it in the show.
Yeah, like I said, I that really came across to me in the first episode, the difference between reading a pretty sterile Maester approved account versus seeing the visceral things that happen in this episode. It's night and day.
Totally.
Well, Kim, I am very excited for Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, Hot D being in my life. I'm really happy and excited to hear that you're joining our pal David Chin on a Cast of Kings. I would like for you to tell people where they can continue following you on your little voyage through the saga. Where are you going to be talking about House of the Dragon this year?
Yeah, I'll be doing weekly episode recaps with Dave Chen over on the A Cast of Kings feed. So you can find all the links and stuff for that. It's just acastofkings.com. I think we're doing like YouTube and TikTok this time around too, which is kind of fun. Nice. So yeah, pretty much anywhere that you are on the internet, you can find me. And then I'll still be doing all my usual weekly articles at insider.com. This interview that I've been alluding to, in this conversation, you can read like the fully fleshed out thing with all of Ryan Condal and Miguel Sapochnik's quotes up on Insider. And yeah, that's where I'll be. But I'm so excited. Thank you for having me. It's fun. I should say that on A Cast of Kings, me and David will be doing a more spoiler free zone when it comes to like the future plot points of what's going on in House of the Dragon.
Right.
So it's super fun to be able to chat with you about all the spoilers, all the book references, all this fun lore stuff that we love to go deep on.
Like, you are my go-to in terms of like dark Westworld. We missed you this season. Game, you're great at that. I love that you're doing a podcast. And I, by the way, if you didn't catch any of that stuff, I'm going to put all that stuff, I'm going to put the link to Cast of Kings and Kim's author profile on Insider. So if you didn't catch that, or if you're driving down the road at 70 miles an hour, I got you. Just hit the show notes and clickety clack, and you'll be following Kim before you even know it. No, thanks to you for talking Thrones with me, and it's cool to catch up with you in LA, and we'll see where this thing goes.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll do a follow-up pod once more is revealed. I can't wait
for sure.